Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I do have with me today is Sally Hemingway, who is the Director of the Division of Business and Community Services, and Chris Pieper, who is the Department's General Counsel. And certainly appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. What I would like to do, and again, I appreciate the invitation you've extended to us to provide some information, because I think there's a significant amount of information associated with this particular project that has not been communicated. And I appreciate your willingness to allow us to provide that information, because I think the information that we're going to provide today will provide a tremendous amount of information that you may not have had, not been available to you in terms of this particular project, the programs that we administer, how we administer those programs, and how the programs and the way that we administer impact any given project, including this one. So again, thank you for giving us the opportunity to provide that information, and I think by the end of my remarks today, you will have a much better feel for some of the detailed, specific information around this particular project. Now, certainly I understand that the focus of today's hearing is on a single project and what steps that can be taken to make sure that something like this never happens again. But any single project has to be viewed in the context of the thousands of businesses, developers, nonprofit, and communities, the DED, along with our local economic development partners across the state, work with over the years. In the last fiscal year alone, DED evaluated more than 1,500 new project applications, and in those applications, applicants were seeking more than $2 billion, $2 billion in assistance. We approved more than 1,000 of those applications, totaling more than $1 billion in assistance. And recently, we've seen the results of our efforts and a number of successes for the Missouri economy. Just last month, we added another 1,100 new jobs, and Missouri's unemployment rate has dropped to its lowest level in over 3 years. Missouri exports continue to surge, up more than $1.2 billion so far this year. And just last month, we signed agreements in China to boost exports for Missouri goods to that country by $4.6 billion over the next 3 years. And, of course, I think we're all excited about the recent announcement in our state of the auto manufacturing industry. $1.1 billion of new investment by Ford in their Como plant to add 1,600 new jobs. They're going to bring the new Transit to production there, a new product line, as well as add a second shift for their current F-150 line. And they're going to construct a new stamping plant. And $380 million in new investment and 1,650 new jobs at the GM plant in Wentzville. They will produce a new product line, which is the Chevy Colorado pickup, and they will also add a second shift on their current line. Now, those developments come on the heels of announcements by a number of well-known companies that, quite frankly, could have invested their dollars anywhere in the world, but they've decided to choose Missouri as a place to locate. Those are companies like IBM, like Unisys, Pioneer, John Deere, Applebee's, Burns McDonnell, Expedia.com, Jet Midwest, Sabreliners, just to name a few. In fact, over the last 2 years, we have received accepted proposals from over 140 companies that want to invest and expand in Missouri. Now, while it's great to be able to have those recent successes, it really is a very simple issue of, in the free market price system, not every company is going to be able to do what they said they could do or what they projected to do. Business plans change, the economy changes, and contracts are won and lost. Just as an example, Chrysler announced their intentions to invest over $1 billion in the Fenton plant outside of St. Louis in 2005, and that was just 4 years before the company declared bankruptcy, the plant was shuttered, and over 6,400 Missourians lost their jobs. Again, businesses have great intentions, have great plans, but because of changes in the economy, in business plans, in contracts, not every business is going to be successful. Businesses fail, and sometimes they succeed, and whether they're a startup company whose history is measured in terms of just a matter of months instead of years, or even if you're an American icon company that's been in business for over a century. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I want to make it perfectly clear today. We in DED are extremely disappointed and upset that this development did not bring the jobs and the opportunities that we thought we was going to. But as disappointed as we are, I can assure you that I think that the people of the city of Moberly are are even more disappointed than we are, as well as the more than 3,000 workers who actually applied for the hundreds of jobs that we thought were coming to that facility. I can assure you that there are many others that are equally as disappointed as you and we are. After all, this was a project that had strong bipartisan support from Senator Kit Bond, from Congressman Lutemeyer, as well as former Governor Bob Holden. Now, the financial markets also reacted positively to this development, with Standard & Poor's rating agency giving them an A-minus rating to the bond issued for the project, and that's a rating that is better than investor grade. We understand that this rating by Standard & Poor's and the purchase of approximately $37 million in bonds by a private investor was based upon the analysis of the project, of the company, its intellectual properties, by the legal, financial, and technical professionals whose duty it was to protect the interest of the city of Moberly, the bond underwriters, and those private investors. The legal, financial, and economic development professionals involved in this project, including bond counsel for the city of Moberly from the St. Louis law firm of Cunningham, Vogel, and Rost, Corey Mahaffey from the Moberly Area Economic Development Corporation, who has contracts with the city of Moberly, as well as Randolph County, Charlton County, Cooper County, and Monroe County, national bond underwriters Morgan and Keegan and Company, and their counsel in the St. Louis office of the international law firm of Armstrong Teasdale, the international intellectual property appraiser and evaluation firm Pellegrino and Associates, and the company's intellectual property counsel Michael J. Weiss, who's a partner in the Los Angeles and Shanghai office of the international law firm Perkins Coie. Now, clearly with any investment opportunity, there's always a risk. There are no sure things in business. But it is exactly this kind of due diligence by legal, financial, and technical professionals that was designed to mitigate and reduce the risk for the city and the private investors. However, the state taxpayers were protected if the company failed, because the state tax incentives that the company was offered were all performance-based. That means that the company didn't receive one dime unless they did what they said they were going to do, and that is to create jobs and make capital investment. Let's just expand a little bit, if we can, on that performance-based concept, because it's critical to understand that the tax incentive programs that this body has designed to incent job creation and capital investment while balancing the needs for fiscal responsibility and accountability of the Missouri taxpayers. And here's how the process works. Generally, Missouri tax incentive programs work by providing a business preliminary authorization for benefits based upon the company's anticipated job creation and capital investment. And then the company only receives the incentives if, in fact, they actually create the jobs or make the capital investment. In other words, a company may be advised that they are eligible for some tax incentives, and they may even get an authorization for tax incentives. But until they meet the program eligibility requirements and they actually create the jobs or make the investment in the Missouri economy, they don't get the benefits of those programs. The performance-based design means that it's the company, not the Missouri taxpayers, that bear the responsibility and loss if the company doesn't do what they say they're going to do. The performance-based design means that it's the free marketplace rather than a state worker that is policing whether or not the company will actually receive the incentives. Because if they don't do what they say they were going to do, if they don't create the jobs, if they don't make the capital investment, then they don't get the incentives. Given that these performance-based incentive programs ensure that Missouri taxpayers will be protected, the state, like our local economic development partners, competed for the opportunity to create hundreds of new manufacturing jobs for this project and invest millions of dollars in our state economy. Unfortunately, this particular opportunity did not materialize, but if we had never competed, the opportunity never would have materialized either. The failure of this single project is not going to stop us from aggressively competing for every opportunity to grow our economy and to create jobs and put Missourians back to work. This single project must not stop economic development in the state as long as taxpayers' dollars are protected. We must continue to compete for opportunities, whether they come from China or they come right here in our backyard with our startup companies, as long as taxpayers' dollars are protected. Now, many of you may have seen this study by the Kauffman Foundation that was recently published, and it shows that virtually all new net jobs created over the last three decades in the United States have come from companies that have operated for 5 years or less. This body recently enacted MOSIRA, which will help support precisely those entrepreneurs that are founding the startup companies that will create the jobs of the future. We must continue these efforts, and we cannot allow this single project to make Missouri inhospitable to the entrepreneurs who will found the next Express Scripts or the next Cerners of the world right here in Missouri, as long as we protect taxpayer dollars. Now, as you may have read, I will be retiring at the end of this year in order to spend all of my time in my home back in St. Louis with my family. But I believe that our economy saw a significant number of successes during my 2 years leading the department. But the state must continue these efforts and not allow one single project to prevent us from competing on economic development opportunities. Now, to understand what really happened with this project, I want to describe the life cycle of a project and give you an idea of the economic development playing field that we as a state are competing with, not only on a national basis, but on a global basis. In a typical business recruitment project, where a business is considering expanding or relocating to our state, we are, or our local economic development partners will receive an inquiry from a site selection committee or a site selection consultant retained by the business. Very often, that site consultant will not even provide us the name of the company. And the reason that they don't is because in many cases, these are large national or international companies that cannot disclose their name due to the impact that the announcement would have on their particular business. Now, over the last 2 years, examples of potential projects for which DED was requested to provide incentive proposals without knowing the name of the company included significantly large projects like large data centers, investment brokerage firms, and information technology resource centers. So again, the site consultant will come to us, tell us they have a project, they will give us the characteristics, the type of business that is looking to relocate to Missouri or to expand, but we will not even know the name of the company. For example, the IBM project in Columbia was named Project Tiger when Missouri was competing for those large number of high-paying jobs that eventually went to Columbia. Many times the company is looking at a number of different states. As a part of that process, they are comparing the tax incentives that they receive from the different states that they are considering. When we receive such a request for proposal, we're expected to respond with an offer of tax incentives based upon a very limited information provided by the site consultant. And that response is often expected within a matter of 72 hours, not 72 days. We actually get requests from site consultants and telling us that they want incentive programs, they want our best package in a number of hours or days and not weeks and not months. And if we fail to respond in time or if we demand additional information before responding, then the site consultant, and by extension the company, will simply cross Missouri off the line and we will never have the opportunity to get those jobs right here in the state. After all, quite frankly, why would a company want to consider Missouri if our response to their inquiry is a demand to do a feasibility study on their business plan or a criminal background check on their CEO? Now, I worked for nearly three decades at a Fortune top 10 corporation, and I retired as a senior manager and executive. I served as the chairman of the Kansas State Chamber of Commerce and the Greater Topeka Chamber of Commerce. And I have served in the cabinets of three administrations for three governors in the world of economic development. So I think that you could probably guess that I've had the opportunity to directly with CEOs of many Fortune 500 companies. And I can tell you that if I were them, and if I were a company, and I wanted to receive an incentive package, and that a feasibility study of my business plan or a criminal background check of my CEO was required, my first reaction would be to take my business elsewhere, because it would seem obvious to me that my company wouldn't be welcome in Missouri. And although we can demand business plans, we can check credit and financial statements and confidential trade secrets as a condition of providing incentives that may be available, we certainly run the risk of sending a strong message to the business community that we're not a business-friendly state and that our chances to compete with other states will be eliminated. The real protection for taxpayers is what I described previously, the performance-based programs that were designed right here by this body, which ensure that the company won't actually receive any tax credits unless they actually do what they say they're going to do, and that is to create jobs and invest capital. It's the marketplace that evaluates a company's ability to succeed and its financial wherewithal, not a DED specialist 1, 2, or 3 sitting on the 7th floor of the Truman Building. Now, again, getting back to the process, particularly to this particular project, often a site consultant will look at multiple communities throughout a state. So they may be looking at multiple states, but they also may be looking at multiple communities within a state. In the last 2 years alone, there were more than 30 such multi-community searches similar to that requested by the site consultant associated with this particular project. In those situations, the site consultant will provide general specifications of the communities that the company would consider, such as proximity to highways and workforce, available buildings, water, electrical power, etc. Sometimes the site consultant or the company will provide those specifications to us here at DED, and sometimes they will go directly to the local regional economic development organization, like the RCGA in St. Louis, like KCADC in Kansas City, like Ready in Columbia, or the MAEDC in North Central Missouri. Upon request from the state, the site selector of the company, the department, or the economic development organization from that region will then send out information regarding the prospect to communities possess the specific characteristics that those communities will respond and offer actual local incentives that will be packaged with the state incentives. So again, regardless of whether it comes to us at DED or goes to a regional economic development organization, that information is sending out to a variety of communities to provide what they would like to propose in terms of incentives for this particular project. That's the way that economic development is done in every state in the nation. It's precisely this type of multi-community search request by companies that sets up a competition between different communities, not only within our state, but in all states and, quite frankly, globally. In fact, where multiple communities are competing for a single project, the department is extremely careful to ensure that we do not in any way influence the selection of one community over another or contribute to setting up a bidding war between competing communities. We are extremely careful not to do that. Likewise, it is our policy not to dictate to local communities what they should or should not offer to recruit the businesses to their communities. Those questions are best answered by the local elected officials who, with their legal, financial, and economic development professionals, know their community's budgets and their economic development priorities better than we do here in Jeff City. Now, the specific state incentives included in the proposal will depend upon the information provided by the company regarding their anticipated job creation and their capital investment they plan to make. The department will typically propose performance-based benefits regardless of the project, and then we might propose programs that offer discretionary benefit in situations where we are competing with other states for the project. In determining the discretionary incentives to include it in a proposal, the department utilizes a team-based approach in order to solicit maximum input and to ensure that we offer the least amount of state incentives necessary to get those jobs to come to Missouri. If a company decides to accept a proposal, then it signs and returns the acceptance form. This accepted form is in no way guarantees the company that it will receive the incentive the packages. Indeed, the effect of accepting the proposal is simply to demonstrate the company's commitment to consider and to move forward in Missouri. In fact, companies are specifically informed of this in the proposal, that these are just incentives that are potentially available based upon the limited information and based upon their actual performance of creating the jobs. The company is specifically informed in that proposal that in order to actually receive the proposed benefits, the company will need to complete each of the applications associated with each of the specific incentives offered, and the company will have to actually do what it says it's going to do in terms of job creation and capital investment. At some point after accepting a proposal, the company will move forward with submitting the necessary applications for the program under which it is seeking incentives. For each of those programs have separate applications, they have separate processes, and they have separate eligibility requirements. And the timing for submitting an application will depend upon the specific program requirements and the company's needs. Now, for example, if we get back to this particular project that we're talking about in terms of Mantech, the company accepted a proposal that included several different tax incentive programs, including Missouri Quality Jobs, Build, and New Jobs Training. Under the Missouri Quality Jobs Program, A company that meets minimum eligibility requirements is entitled to receive tax credits and keep some of the withholding taxes they would otherwise send to the Department of Revenue for the jobs that they created. These are for the new jobs they create. The company submits an application, which is called a notice of intent. And they actually, in this particular case, the company did submit that NOI for 612 new jobs, and they received an authorization for the benefits. The company then had a statutory defined period to actually create the jobs. And as I indicated earlier, because the company did not create the jobs, no tax incentives were provided under this program. The second part of the proposal was the BUILD program. The BUILD program is jointly administered by the Department of Economic Development and the Missouri Development Finance Board. The company applied for $4.5 million in BUILD bonds, which would have provided the company approximately $6.9 million in tax credits over the 15-year of the term of the bonds. Now, although the company received an authorization under the program, the bonds cannot be issued unless the company raises the necessary capital to purchase the bonds. And I think this is a very important fact. The company has to purchase the bonds. Not some outside investor. The company has to issue, they have to actually purchase the bonds, which in this case, the company was not able to do. Since the company is responsible for purchasing the bonds, all the risk and all the liability rest on the company. Does the company fail to purchase the bonds or to create the jobs? Again, no tax credits were issued under this program. The third piece was the new jobs training program. That allows a company to use withholding tax from the new jobs created to pay for the cost of training through a community college. The company only gets the benefits under this program when it hired the workers to train and generated withholding taxes on those workers. Again, the risk and the responsibility resides with the company as it incurs the training cost and it's reimbursed after it creates the jobs and performs the eligible training. Now, while Mobley Area Community College submitted paperwork indicating that the company would be seeking to utilize the program, the company never submitted an application and therefore received no benefits, nor would it have received any benefits until it had created the jobs and generated the withholding taxes necessary to cover its training costs. There were two other programs involved in this project, the Community Development Block Grant Industrial Infrastructure Grant and the Recovery Zone Facility Bonds, but neither of these programs provide funding directly to the company. Instead, those programs benefit public entities, like in this particular case, the City of Moberly and the Moberly Industrial Development Authority. The Community Development Block Grant Industrial Infrastructure Program provides grants to cities or counties to construct public infrastructure necessary to serve a company or a number of companies locating or expanding that create jobs. The state public benefit derived from the grant to the city is the requirement that the company agrees to hire at least 51% low to moderate income people. DED's proposal to the company included a possibility of the city to the city of Moberly to access this industrial infrastructure grant. On June 5th of 2011, DED received an application from the City of Moberly, which expressed no need for public infrastructure improvements to meet the company's needs, but instead requested a grant to support machinery and equipment. DED staff communicate with Mr. Mahaffey and their representative Molly McGovern regarding the request. The eligibility evaluation of the application by DED required additional information from the city and the company in order to complete the full review. The information requested by DED was never provided, and so accordingly, no recommendations for a CDBG grant was made, and no CDBG grant funds were granted to the city for this particular project. The last item is the Recovery Zone Facility Bonds. Now, this is one that I want to spend just a little bit of time about because I think there is a lot of confusion about this particular program, what it does, and what the role of the state is in this particular program. The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 created the Recovery Zone Facility Bonds that may be used, but they have to be issued prior to January 1st of 2011. The Recovery Zone Facility Bonds are tax-exempt private activity bonds that offer lower interest rates typically associated with tax-exempt bonds. Because the Recovery Zone Facility Bonds will be used for privately owned or privately used projects, these bonds were typically Chapter 100 bonds, industrial revenue bonds, industrial development bonds, or other type of private activity bonds. As a general rule, Proceeds of these bonds can be used to finance new capital investments that will be owned and used by almost any industry, industrial, commercial, retail, office, or other business activity that is located in a designated recovery zone. The recovery zone facility bond cap was allocated to each Missouri county by the federal government out of the AARA and summed a total of $343 million for the entire state. So when you add up the allocations that were made to each one of the counties, that totaled up to be $343 million for the state. Although the RO provided that counties must use their recovery zone bond cap before January 1st of 2011, under Missouri law, all unused county recovery zone bond allocations reverts back to the state on July 1st of 2010. So while under the federal guidelines they have until the end of 2011 to use those bonds, we have a state statute that says that they have not been allocated, have not been used by July 1st, they revert back to the state. The Missouri legislature in House Bill 191 created the recapture provision to provide an opportunity for unused cap bonds to be accessed by projects in other counties that were unable to close prior to the federal deadline. House Bill 191 created a system whereby DED could accept applications for unused cap from local users on behalf of private entities. DED could then allocate the available bond cap based upon projects that had local impact like jobs, investment, local distress, or readiness. Now, there are a few points that need to be made regarding the DED allocation of these bonds. DED is not authorizing the bonds. DED is not issuing the bonds. DED is not underwriting the bonds, and DED is not guaranteeing the bonds. As prescribed by the legislature, DED's only role in the process was to reallocate unused bond capacity, which would in turn allow for otherwise taxable bonds to be converted into a tax-exempt bond, thus lowering the cost of debt to the local issuer. This particular project, MAMTEC, was brought to DED for the bond allocation by Mr. Mahaffey and by Morgan Keegan. Unlike many other projects that applied for these reallocation bonds, this particular project was one that was ready to close, as the IDA had adopted its inducement resolution and most of the items on the bond closing schedule had already been completed by the time that the application was made. This means that the project could close in advance of the December 31st, 2010 deadline for closing established under the federal guidelines. Now, as I told you today, we cannot let this single project prevent us or prohibit us from aggressively competing for opportunities that are fiscally responsible. In this way, the performance-based and tax incentives that you have designed did exactly that by protecting the taxpayers. From the media reports and the questions that we've received regarding this project, it really seems that the word due diligence has become the buzzword around this building. But the bottom line is that our performance-based tax incentives are designed to reduce the need for costly, time-consuming, and quite frankly, wasteful due diligence by state workers when our programs allow the free market to police whether the company ultimately will receive the tax incentives requested. That said, the legislature has established minimum statutory criteria, and we follow the law to verify that when a company is eligible for the requested incentives, and we verify that the company has in fact created the jobs made and the necessary investment that they committed. And that even though our incentives programs are performance-based, we still perform a series of due diligence checks, some of which have been performed and completed for this particular project, others that still would have continued to be completed until this company defaulted. Those are designed to detect any possible fraud or misrepresentation as early as possible in the life cycle of the project. But we perform this due diligence in a way that balances the need to protect taxpayers with the need to ensure that businesses understand that Missouri is a state that's open for business. Our due diligence process begins the moment we are contacted about a project, and we continue through the entire life cycle of that project, even after it receives its final issuance of tax credits. If at any point the business fails to perform, or if a potential fraud is uncovered, any benefits immediately cease, repayment with penalties may be required, and the matter will be referred to the appropriate law enforcement agencies. We realize that no due diligence process is foolproof, and any process can always be improved. I'd be happy to discuss with you today at the end of my comments and any details you'd like to know about the extensive due diligence that we do on projects that we did on this project and other projects. However, I do understand from yesterday's testimony that there was some question regarding our due diligence process as it relates to an April 13, 2010 email the department received from Mr. Edward Lee in DED's contract office in Shanghai regarding the company's China operation. Now, I would like to make note that in an April 7th email that preceded this April 13th email, in an April 7th email that was distributed to Mr. Mahaffey and other communities that were being considered for this particular project, our project manager, Ms. Lynn Shea, advised the communities that there was a number of information that is still needed, including that we had not been able to locate the Chinese companies and the locations in China. So again, on April the 7th, we asked the company and their representatives, and we advised Mr. Mahaffey, as well as the other communities still in the running, that we had not been able to verify the location in China of this particular business. And we told the business that we needed additional information to be able to do that. Now, as this committee is aware, the department asked Mr. Lee to research the company's Chinese operation. During the few days he had before leaving China to come to the United States from April 14th through the May 2nd, Mr. Lee was able to conduct preliminary research regarding the company, which he provided in his April 13th email. Following the receipt of that information, the department contacted Mr. Lee, and we determined that his research was based upon very limited sources of information, and that Mr. Lee had not personally visited the site or spoken to anybody at the facility. In addition, the information he reviewed did not appear current beyond 2009. We asked Mr. Lee to conduct additional research on the company, determine their current location when he returned to China in May. Now, in the meantime, company representatives, including MamTech CEO Bruce Cole, came to Missouri to visit the Missouri communities that they were considering, and those communities included Mexico, Sedalia, and Moberly. During the company site visit, Mr. Cole and other company representatives again reaffirmed what they had already had submitted in their documentation that had been provided to DED and to the communities, that the company was in production in China as late 2009. As the company was preparing to leave Missouri, they indicated that they were leaning heavily towards selecting Sedalia. However, on May 3rd, we were informed that Mr. Mahaffey had contacted the company's representative, independent of DED, and had agreed to guarantee financing to MamTech if they would agree to locate in Moberly by offering a 5-year annual appropriations bond. We understand that there had been multiple conversations and communications between Mr. Mahaffey and the company, independent of DED, regarding the project, including the company's representative informing Mr. Mahaffey that the company would commit to locating in Moberly if Mr. Mahaffey would commit Moberly to facilitating financing the project. This would be accomplished through an initial funding agreement whereby the company would pay $100,000 in earnest money to MAEDC to cover legal fees associated with putting together the financing for the project. After we learned that Moberly had agreed to guarantee the financing for the project, Terry Maglich of DED called Mr. Mahaffey to inform him that the DED China office had been unable to verify the location of the company's production facility. Mr. Mahaffey told Mr. Maglich that he believed that the information was incorrect and that he was retaining professionals to conduct their own investigation on the company, and he would share those findings with DED when it was complete. Mr. Maglich also instructed DED project manager Lynn Shea to follow up with Mr. Lee to determine whether he had discovered any additional information after he had returned to China. Ms. Shea sent Mr. Lee additional addresses the company had provided and asked for any additional information he could undercover related to the production facilities that they claimed were in China. Ms. Shea also notified Mr. Mahaffey by email on May 13th that DED's China office was looking into MamTech's China facility in greater detail. On May 17th, Mr. Lee provided Ms. Shea additional information regarding the two Hong Kong office addresses provided by the company, which were administrative offices, but he did not provide any additional information regarding the production facility. In light of this information, Mr. Magalich notified Mr. Mahaffey in response to Mr. Mahaffey's inquiry as to the timing of any build award that DED would not recommend the project to MDFB until the financing was in place or secured and the project was definitely moving forward. Mr. Magalich informed Mr. Mahaffey that Mantech is a startup company and that MDFB would require the sources and uses and a business plan that indicate the company had customers and contracts. On June 3rd, Mr. Mahaffey provided DED and MDFB with confirmation of his and bond counsel's conversation with Michael Weiss, an international property attorney and partner in Shanghai and Los Angeles offices of the international law firm of Perkin Coie, describing his two separate visits to MAMTEC's China facility to verify information for MAMTEC investors. Mr. Weiss's most recent visit to the facility was in November of 2009, where he observed a new 60-ton production line in operation producing the company's cellulose. On a previous visit, he had observed the company's 18-ton pilot product line, which was in operation for several years at a tea company co-located on the site. Mr. Weiss verified much of the information provided in the company's business plan and in their application materials. Based upon this detailed eyewitness account, we believe that the preliminary and incomplete information provided by the China office was insufficient to prevent a recommendation for the project. We also understood that additional due diligence was being conducted by Mr. Mahaffey, by bond counsel, by Standards & Poor's, and by Pellegrino & Associates. And when Mr. Mahaffey informed us that Standard & Poor's had rated the bonds as A-, we concluded that our initial concerns regarding our preliminary research by our China office were unfounded. Now, this is just one issue that we look at evaluating this project. And again, as I mentioned earlier, we'd be happy to describe the additional due diligence that we performed. However, I would like to give you some content regarding the evaluation of our due diligence efforts. While the department has had a due diligence process in place for many years, we have consistently worked to improve it in a manner that is cost-effective and that balances the needs to maintain a business-friendly environment with the needs to protect the state. After all, due diligence is a question of the level of diligence that's due, which is based upon the level of risk involved. Where there is no risk to taxpayers, it is an inefficient use of taxpayer dollars for DED to double-check or second-guess anything that a company says. It is an inefficient use of tax dollars to do a criminal background check on the CEO of GM or Ford or any other publicly traded company that wants to create jobs and wants to invest in Missouri. And it is an inefficient use of taxpayers' dollars to run a credit check or to evaluate the business plan of a company seeking only a performance-based benefit like Missouri Quality Jobs, because no matter what we find, we, DED, do not have the statutory authority to prevent them from receiving the entitled benefits if they create the jobs. But even more importantly than the inefficient use of taxpayers' dollars, this vetting for vetting's sake sends a strong message to companies. It's telling them that we won't take a chance on them. It's telling them that they're not welcome to try to succeed in Missouri, to start or to grow their business in Missouri. Now, I will tell you that no one at DED has seen Ford's patent or their business plan for the transit van that they're going to build in Clay Como. But I assure you that every person in DED is sure glad that they're going to build those cars and trucks right here in Missouri. Neither I, nor anyone at DED, nor any member of this committee can actually forecast whether a company is going to be able to complete the plans that they had anticipated. But we cannot guarantee that a business will succeed. But if we start assuming that every business that walks through the door is a criminal, then there's going to be a whole lot fewer companies and businesses walking through the door considering us as a state. Now, I have worked in Kansas and Missouri, and I have received feedback, very positive and consistent feedback, from site consultants, from economic development professionals, and from businesses that our current due diligence process that we have today is too onerous and inhibits business from considering Missouri. Now, certainly I acknowledge that there may be a rare situation where a business commits fraud in the application process, but we shouldn't let that one rare occasion dictate how we do business with everybody else. But if a business wants to lie on an application for tax incentives, they're only hurting themselves, because that fraud could result in criminal prosecution. And if a business is lying about what it intends to accomplish, it won't be able to create the necessary jobs or make the necessary investments that they actually need to do to receive the benefits that we've offered to them. Let me make this one statement absolutely clear. We care about the integrity of the programs, and we care about the integrity of the state. And if any company commits fraud or misrepresentation on an application for state incentives, and that if any fraud or misrepresentation was committed by a company or anyone involved with it, that guilty party should be prosecuted to its fullest extent. Had the Attorney General and other law enforcement agencies not launched an investigation following the company's default, the information that has come to light following the company's default would have caused us, the Department of Economic Development, to refer the matter to the Attorney General's office for investigation, as we have referred numerous projects to the Attorney General's office, to the U.S. Attorney Office, to the FBI, and to other local law enforcement agencies. But ultimately, we are not the Attorney General's office or the FBI. We are the Department of Economic Development, and our mission is to help businesses create jobs and not to assume that businesses are criminals and second-guess all the information that they provide. We have learned and will continue to learn from this experience, but we must not let this single project stop us from competing for opportunities to create jobs and grow the Missouri economy. That was probably more than you expected in my opening remarks, Mr. Chairman, but I think it provides a tremendous amount of information that I hope is helpful to you. And at this point, I and my team would be glad to answer any questions you might have.